The Lima Coast to Coast, Show 27, June 2nd, 2006. Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law. Welcome to Thelema Coast to Coast. My name is John Crow and I'm the host of the show. Today's show is going to be short because tomorrow morning I'm flying out to California and I have not had a chance to edit all of the segments that are previously recorded. So on today's show I'm going to read a few user feedback messages, remind everybody about how to contact Thelema Coast to Coast and about the Thelema Coast to Coast meetup that's happening in Berkeley, California on June 6th, and also have an interview with Keith418 about strategic goals. So as a reminder, you can contact Thelema Coast to Coast in four ways. The first is via email, podcast@thelemacoasttocoast. Next on the website, www.thelemacoasttocoast.com, via the phone number 206-600-4216, and of course by mail, at Thelema Coast to Coast, care of John Crow, P.O. Box 7045, Marietta, Georgia, M-A-R-I-E-T-T-A, Georgia, 30065 in the USA. Now the big news is that there is going to be the first Thelema Coast to Coast meetup happening at Jupiter's in Berkeley on June 6th, that is 060606. That's going to be from 6 p.m. till late in the evening. And for those who are in the Bay Area, we strongly encourage you to attend. I'm going to be there, Keith418, and a number of other listeners and guests. So please come on down. You don't have to get there at 6. People will be coming and going all night, so feel free to come by when your schedule permits. Jupiter's is at 2181 Shattuck Avenue. That's in Berkeley, California. And for directions, if you need it, call 510-THETAPS, as in THETAPS. So I hope to see everybody in the Bay Area who listens to Thelema Coast to Coast to come on down to Jupiter. I will have a handful of Thelema Coast to Coast bumper stickers, and we'll be giving those away. So I hope to see everyone there. We'll take lots of pictures, and we'll be putting them up on the Thelema Coast to Coast website when I return. Now, let's get into the listener email. The first is from Tiffin. Tiffin writes, 93 John, been listening to the TCTC podcast since their inception, and I want to say once again how impressed I am with the continued quality and variety of the cast. Also, congratulations on the anniversary. Here's to many more. I really enjoyed the Holy Days broadcast, particularly the third installment, which actually gave me goosebumps. I put my blip on the Frapper map, so there's one more female in the mix. Keep up the great work. I look forward to many more podcasts. Love is the law. Love under will. Tiffin. Well, thank you, Tiffin. I appreciate that. And thanks for the reminder. On the Thelema Coast to Coast website, there is a Frapper map that has well over 150 listeners who are mapped out on the Frapper map from across the world. It is predominantly male, so any women listening, let's get you represented on the Frapper map, but I would love to see anybody who is listening to the show just to take a few moments and go to the podcast Frapper map and just put your name and location on there so we can see how the program is distributed throughout the world. Also, just a reminder that there is a Thelema Coast to Coast MySpace page. There's well over 400 people subscribed to that, and you can get to that by going www.myspace.com/thelemacoasttocoast, or just go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website and there is a banner for it, so you can click that. You can get updates about when there are new Thelema Coast to Coast episodes posted and any other blog entries. All right, the next email is from Dean. It says, 93, thanks for the wonderful podcast. In one of the podcasts, you mentioned there is an email option for reminders when the new podcast is available. I would really like this, but can't find the option on the website. How can I get this reminder email? Thanks, 93, Dean. When you sign up, there is a checkbox at the bottom that says to receive information or not. It's that checkbox. You can go into your profile and your mailbox and check that on or off. And that indicates whether or not you'll get it. But I still have to manually send the email out. I haven't gotten around to doing that. I haven't gotten much feedback. So if you are interested in receiving email notifications when new shows are available, please send an email or a message through the website to let me know. I don't want to spam everybody, but if that is useful to the listeners, I would be happy to do it. All right. The next email is actually a voicemail. So here is one of our brothers.
Do what thou wilt to be the whole of the law. Hey, John. This is Freighter Ave Dockel. I wanted to give you a belated congratulations on Thelema Coast to Coast's first birthday. It's a little late, but still appreciate it, I'm sure. I think I could speak for a lot of people in the Thelemic and occult communities when I say that you're doing an immense favor for us. I know that I look forward to every single show. They go right to my iPod and get listened to everywhere, which probably makes some of my teachers rather angry. The show never fails to both entertain and inform. I look forward to many more excellent shows in the future, so please keep up the great work, pun intended. Love is the law, love underwill.
Thanks again for that voicemail. I appreciate the well wishes. Also, I appreciate you leaving a message. Since this is an audio program, the audio feedback is very, very welcome. Again, for everybody listening, that phone number is 206-600-4216. Well, that's enough feedback for now. As I said earlier, this is going to be a short show. I have packing and laundry and cleaning and preparations to do for my trip tomorrow. So I want to get this finished up and get it out. So here is an interview with Keith 418. We're talking once more about strategic goals.
Keith, welcome back to the podcast, 93.
93, John. Thanks for having me.
There is a lot of discussion lately about strategic goals for the OTO, and one of the areas in which this is being discussed is Crowley's Blue Equinox, Equinox 3-1, in which he details a lot of the founding documents of the OTO. When a lot of people are calling for strategic goals, they use the Blue Equinox as an example of what Crowley intended the order to be, and that strategic goals should be in alignment with the Blue Equinox. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm a big supporter of the Blue Equinox model. I think it should be tried. I'm not sure all of it will work. I'm not sure all of it would be practical in this day and age, but I don't think we're going to know that until we try doing it. And there's this sort of resistance to a lot of the stuff in there and this kind of willingness to mess with the recipe before you actually bake the cake. But I would really like to see every part of the Blue Equinox put into effect. And I would like to, you know, experiment with various ways to sort of make it work. And I'm disappointed, I think, when people kind of back away from the Blue Equinox model or say that it's outdated or don't really feel that kind of enthusiasm about it. And most of the time, it's because they look at that model and they don't really want to reckon with the sacrifices that it's going to entail. And what's interesting, too, is that for a long time, when we asked the leaders of the OTO what their plans were for the order, what they wanted, they would come back to the Blue Equinox OTO. And I often categorize their responses as being, you know, somewhat similar to a demon forced into the triangle and compelled to respond. They weren't, you know, loudly proclaiming their allegiance and their enthusiasm about the Blue Equinox model. It was when you push them to the point where they could not escape, would they come out and say, yes, it's actually the Blue Equinox model, that's what we want to do. Because obviously, even at that point, they realized how difficult it was going to be given the prevailing attitudes about seriousness and work and effort and structure and discipline and organization in the OTO. So it wasn't something that I ever saw them as being particularly enthusiastic about. Yet at the same time, that was the model they had from Crowley, and so that was what they sort of defaulted back to. And now, you know, I don't know whether people are still really on board with that. They're looking at the strategic goals, as you keep pointing out. They've said that they were going to provide them this year. They haven't shown up yet. It's been many months now that we've been waiting for them.
As of June, it will be 18 months since they've started looking at the strategic goals.
And again, I mean, I think the problem is that in order to make these sorts of commitments, they have to, you know, really reckon with the sacrifices that the ambitions in the Blue Equinox are going to entail. And this is something that, you know, they don't really want to do. And I think I've said this before on the podcast. There's a great quote: ambition that does not reckon with sacrifice results in neurosis. And the OTO has ambition, sort of, around the Blue Equinox. It doesn't want to reckon with the sacrifices that it needs to make, and so the result is neurosis. And I think, you know, that's kind of the problem. I know many of the members really want the Blue Equinox model. They talk about it in shorthand a lot. You know, other people refer to it dismissively as the Boy Scout manual and are not interested in pursuing that agenda at all, and have more or less given up on it. They just think it's totally impractical, that it's not worth doing, and I think that's very disappointing, but it's not surprising given the model the leaders themselves have set, which is, we're not really going to tell you where the order is going to be in 5 or 10 years. We're not going to set standards, hold people accountable to them. We're just going to keep it as loosey-goosey as we can and hope to make everybody happy. And the result of that is, you know, I think it has been very, very poor.
Well, have you read the memorandum to Liber 101 issued by Sabatius?
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is sort of getting the reaction from people who aren't necessarily in the OTO, who are a little bit more objective sometimes than the rest of us. And this one friend of mine who's, you know, not in the OTO at all, but a very bright guy, pointed out they're just trying to take away all of the controversial, transgressive, threatening, difficult-to-do, non-normative aspects of those documents. And the stuff that's hard to do is the stuff they don't want to do. You know, the stuff that's going to be really tough to do, that's not what they're interested in. The buying the property, the setting up, you know, of interorganizational structures that are challenging and difficult. That's the stuff that they're trying to stay away from. And, you know, that we could do a lot of that stuff if we really wanted to, but the ambition isn't there.
A lot of their excuses seem to me to be pretty kind of shallow. For instance, the aspects of Liber 101 that people would donate their property and live, and in return the order would support them. They say that cannot be done based on nonprofit laws and so forth. But how do Catholics do it? How do Buddhists do it? There's a lot of religious orders all throughout the United States who do just exactly that.
Right, but they're filled with people who are much more serious about their religious issues than the people in the OTO are serious about the Lima. I mean, this is the big, ugly truth people need to look at. This is the thing, this is the white elephant in the living room that no one wants to talk about. The people in the OTO are simply not as into the religion of the Lima as the people are in these other groups into their religion and their thing. The people in Buddhist groups, in Catholic groups, you know, in many different kinds of religions, are focused, dedicated, absolutely willing to be disciplined, and are willing to follow discipline and training in order to get what they want. And they have structures, they have property, they have people who are accountable, they protect their property, and they're able to manage it effectively. The people in the OTO just aren't committed enough to Thelema to make any of that stuff possible. And so consequently, you know, even little things like renting a separate facility, which most groups take for granted, people in the OTO celebrate as this incredible achievement that, you know, should be awestruck at, that we should all be awestruck at the idea that it's actually happened. When, in fact, this is ludicrous given what other religious groups take for granted.
I've even seen a bishop within the OTO celebrates starting business meetings for 6 months. I mean, starting business meetings on time for 6 months.
Right.
That
right.
was newsworthy to this
right.
bishop.
Right, this is praiseworthy. You're getting a space after you've been in an area for 20 years, you know, renting a separate facility. This is like a huge big deal that everybody should be proud of, and we should be marching around with our chest thrust out and all psyched about. Come on, this is, who are they talking to? Are they talking to children? I mean, you know, you have people, I'm sure you have people in your life who you explain your religious group to or the OTO to, and they say, is that a real religion? And I've had people say this to me. It's sort of insulting when you think about it if they don't know that much about the group. And then I think about it, and I'm like, well, if they don't see a building and they don't see really serious people and they don't see that sort of dedication, then it's a legitimate question. And for many people in the OTO, it's not a real religion. It's a game. It's sort of something like the Society for Creative Anachronism. It's this goofy thing that they do for fun. They're in it for the parties and for the good times. And the larger aspects of it that really require sacrifice and dedication and self-discipline, they're not into that. That's a drag to them. And they, you know, as soon as it gets hard, they leave.
What kind of sacrifices would they have to make?
Well, I've looked at this a lot in terms of property. And if you look at property in the United States, you have to be disciplined in order to own property, because there are other people who, if you're not self-disciplined about it, will try to take it away from you. So if you don't police your property, if you don't manage it well, there'll be accidents, there'll be other problems, people can sue you. Property is something that is tangible and can be tracked down and traced. It's not something you can hide easily, especially physical property. And if you don't have steady, mature, serious, dedicated people that are willing to stay in an area and manage a piece of property over a long period of time, you're just not going to have it. And people in the OTO aren't really that committed. You know, they take sabbaticals, they travel around, they leave the group for other groups, they become Hindus or Christians or Buddhists again. They form little schism groups to come and go. And consequently, you don't have a cadre of people in a given area that are mature enough and dedicated enough to keep a piece of property and really protect it. And if we had those sorts of people, we might have property, and we might have that sort of seriousness that comes with owning property, that sort of gravitas that results when you've invested a huge amount of your own resources into a piece of property and you're going to protect it. You're a homeowner, and you understand how that works.
Yes.
It's no different from a church or a religious group. And the fact that we don't have property, I think, and don't particularly want it in a lot of cases, is an indication of just how non-serious the group really is. And people can argue with me about this until the cows come home, but the facts on the ground really are it's difficult for the group to purchase property. It's difficult for people to plan the way they need to. It's difficult to set up organizations to protect the property from lawsuits. It's difficult to look at things like insurance. We have trouble paying rent on rented facilities. How are we going to own a piece of property?
Right. Who's going to give anybody in this group a mortgage, you know, for 30 years or even some kind of variable rate mortgage? Who's going to do that?
Right. And we could have all of those things if we had people that were serious about it, that weren't just here for the parties, that really were dedicated to Thelema and to Crowley over a long-term period. I mean, this is the thing that's really tricky. You know, you and I talk about this because we see people coming into the organization that are very enthusiastic, really down with it, because they haven't studied it deeply and they don't see some of the problems that are involved with it. And over time, these are the people who, you know, become disenchanted, don't like the kind of work that's really involved, you know, are unhappy with the sort of judge-me-not social scene, as our friend Stephen in Boston puts it, and consequently they depart. And what you're often left with are the people who have nowhere else to go. And these are also not people who are really intent on getting property or intent on advancing the order in serious adult ways, and instead just want to have a fun little social group of fellow misfits to hang out with and not judge each other. And those people are never going to own property. That's just not the kind of property owner class you're going to see.
What are the kind of sacrifices would people have to make other than the dedication for property or the money necessary to get the property? What other kind of less tangible sacrifices would people have to make?
Well, you know, the difficulty with any sort of project like this is opportunity costs in business. And actually, you know, one of our bishops explained this very well once. I was very impressed with it. If you choose to do something, it means you are choosing not to do other things. And this upsets a lot of people whose idea of freedom is the most amount of choice all the time available to me. I don't really accept that as an idea of freedom, because I think that that huge, overwhelming amount of choice constantly there makes you sort of shallow if that's what you're trying to conserve, whereas I think dedication and focus really requires that you not do a whole bunch of different things. And part of the sacrifices that we're looking at is that people would have to be, you know, diligent and focused about really building the OTO, which would mean that they couldn't be diligent and focused about pursuing any number of other issues or hobbies or interests or other organizations. And when you tell this to people, they bitterly resent it. They want that maximum amount of freedom, that maximum amount of opportunity to go and do whatever they want. And that's what they associate the Lima with. And when you tell them no, it's really about narrowing down your choices and focusing on the thing that's the most important and excluding other things. They don't like to hear that. That's not what they want it to be.
What about the education necessities, the reading or the familiarity with the material, the doing the practices, the developing of discipline, all of those kind of aspects that are the individual aspects that are involved in the practices of Thelema, but also kind of add to the group cohesion because everybody else is doing the same thing also?
Well, I guess I see that as an important issue. I'm not always sure that it has a great deal of impact on OTO per se, but I think that if people aren't interested in determining what their own will is and, you know, are basically slaves and drones of the larger secular culture or, you know, whatever is running their lives, it's not Thelema, then the result will be that they won't be the kind of people with the moxie and the strength and the initiatory force to set up and manage and run and inspire people to be involved in the sort of organizations that we're talking about. On the other hand, you know, if you're not really interested in Crowley and Thelema and the practices he laid out, why would you dedicate vast amounts of your time and your life and your energy and your choices to setting up an organization that he planned and managed and envisioned and thought up? And this is kind of the conflict, because you see people get involved in the order thinking it can be anything they want, because that's their version of Thelema, which is it's anything I want it to be. And when we actually start narrowing down their choices to work on goals and focus them on things, they resent it and say, no, this isn't what Thelema is. Thelema is about me doing whatever I want to do, whenever I want to do it, and having the maximum amount of freedom possible. And they're going to resist that. They're not going to want to do it because they were never that interested or into it to begin with in the first place. And this is the crisis, is that the OTO doesn't want to alienate a lot of these people and sort of make them choose to fish or cut bait. And there we are. You know, we're sort of stuck with them, and they're waiting for them to either decide to get committed or to leave.
Well, what's going to happen if the leadership does abandon the Blue Equinox and comes up with some other goal set?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they could conceivably come up with something better than Crowley did. I mean, they'd have to make that argument to me. I'm not ruling it out, because that would be, you know, sort of dogmatic, which is what we kind of want to avoid. On the other hand, I don't really see them being the kind of initiates that could envision a massively better organization or some change. I mean, I could be wrong about that. But again, I mean, I don't see a lot of our leaders being very invested or interested in a lot of these materials. In fact, over time, I've seen more and more of them kind of drift away from it. You know, I saw this one woman talking about how she was once really into Libra Oz and thought it was really great. And over time, she just doesn't accept it anymore and doesn't really think of it as being acceptable or important in the same way she used to, and she sort of distanced herself from it. And for me, this is somebody, you know, who illustrates this process of distancing and ideological migration away from Crowley. And I don't really see our leaders being the kind of people who say, no, this is what's important, this material is important, you need to study it, you can't avoid it, you need to look at the hard parts, you can't just treat it like a buffet. That's not what our leaders are about. They're about placating in a sort of democratic, pandering fashion to the foibles and fads of the majority of the members. I mean, one person pointed out, I think very accurately, that rather than leading themselves, they wait to see whether an idea is popular among the members and then sort of push it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not leading, that's reacting. I mean, this is kind of like making movies based on what the audience once in the test run. And this isn't a cult leadership to me. I mean, a cult leadership is, Crowley didn't sit around and say to his members, well, what do you think we should do, or what should we charge for this, or how should this ritual be structured? He went off, he designed it, and he, you know, said, this is what you're going to do. And this kind of democratic, let's decide what we want to do sort of thing implies that the mass of members somehow has this sort of initiatory understanding and ability that they don't demonstrate. If they did demonstrate it, why would they need to be in the OTO at all? Why wouldn't we all be ninth degrees?
Right. One of the paradoxes so many of these people miss is they're so big on democracy and consensus. When's the last time consensus led anybody to enlightenment?
Right. Well, I just don't think 100 stupid people are smarter than one smart person. And this is kind of the dilemma, is that there's this feeling in a democratic society that the majority is right and that the majority has power and that the majority has wisdom. And that's not really demonstrated to me in the real world. If you needed, for example, brain surgery really badly, would you go and, you know, randomly collect 200 people from around the street and have them advise you on how to cut into your head and do the operation? Of course not. You would go to the best possible brain surgeon you could, who is kind of a minority, you know, in the general population, and get their help. And people want to tell you that in order for occultism to be moral, it can't be like that. There can't be an elite. There can't be a hierarchy. But that's just patently not true. In real practice, we don't take everybody seriously the same way. We don't go out and think that every ritual that every idiot comes up with in the OTO is somehow valuable and important. And you and I both know this because we've been in the OTO long enough to see rituals that people wrote, you know, 10 or 15 years ago thinking they were this great thing. They don't even remember writing them themselves anymore.
Yes. or receiving these wonderful, inspired texts and
right.
How these will change the world.
Right. No one cares. It really takes work and effort and a tremendous amount of dedication and single purposedness to attain. And consequently, you know, it's not as easy as an egalitarian of process as everybody wants it to be. So the result of this egalitarianism and this idea that everyone's as good as everyone else, the end result is mediocrity and failure. I'm sorry, but that's pretty much been borne out time and time again.
So when do you think the leaders are going to deliver something? It's
already been almost 18 months. It's a paradox. I mean, I don't know. I don't really see the leaders themselves being very cohesive about this, and I don't even think that they have the information they need to make a lot of the decisions that they're trying to make when it comes to strategic planning. I mean, one of the things people have asked me as I've advanced, you know, the argument that the order needs to do strategic planning, I think since 1999 I've been making this argument. They say, well, how would you go about it? What strategic plans would you make? And I said, well, I would need to have all the data. I would need to have, you know, a whole accurate set of information about the state of the organization, where everybody was, you know, a whole bunch of things. And I'm not convinced that they even have that data or are using it. I would hope that they have it and are using it to make their plans.
Right.
And I don't always see them being very interested in collecting that kind of data and putting it together and studying it and seeing what it tells them. I would hope that that's the case. I hope that's going on, but I don't always see that as being what's happening.
Well, I don't think they collect much data at all. In fact, there have been times that people have called for a lot more data collection, and the leadership is actually very resistant to it.
Right. Well, I don't understand how they can make the plans that they need to, or even come up with strategic plans at all without a certain amount of hard data. And, you know, whether they have it or not, whether they know this or not, you know, I don't know. I can hope that they do. My best hope is that they've got it. But again, I mean, I think the leaders suffer from the same problem the members do. They don't want to be tied down. They don't want to be forced into some sort of straitjacket of accountability and commitment. And if they're not, they're going to limit what they're able to do. And their response is basically to celebrate whatever happens.
Right.
You know,
the paradox they have is they don't want to be tied down by making goals, but by not making goals, they're tying themselves down to do nothing.
Yeah, well, there's the tyranny of structure and the tyranny of structurelessness. And I think the OTO as an organization has suffered far, far more in the last 20 years that I've been involved with it from the tyranny of structurelessness than from the tyranny of structure. But again, if your vision of Thelema is it's total freedom to do whatever you want all the time and total freedom of choice and no commitments and no structure and no discipline and no regulation, then consequently you're going to object to that. And I don't think the leaders have been advocating a very good opposing argument. Now, privately, most of them, I many of them would agree with them. I don't know about most of them, but many of them will agree with us about this. They'll say, no, Thelema is about self-discipline. Crowley was right when he said it was at a guess about 90% self-discipline. Yes, he was correct about that. But they're not the ones going out and telling the members, hey, guess what? Thelema is 90% self-discipline. It's not accepting the book of the law like you would accept a creed. It's not this belief-based or faith-based religion. It's actually about really demonstrating self-discipline. And you can say you believe in the book of the law, but if you don't have any self-discipline, then you're not really a Thelemite and you're not really getting it. They're not making that case. It's an unpopular case to make. It's far more popular just to accept everybody in the world as a Thelemite and, oh, we're all equal and we're all gods and we're all wonderful just the way we are. Who is interested in that anymore? Is that really that appealing? I mean, who finds that anything but a sort of guarantee for mediocrity and failure?
I think that's a good stopping point. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, John.
93.
Take care, 93.
You know, this is a short show, but wanted to get something out because I will be out of town in the Bay Area for almost 2 weeks. I'll be returning in mid-June. At that time, I will be working on another podcast, so please expect that sometime around the 20th or so. The next one will either have an interview with Breck Outland talking about C.F. Russell and or an interview with Sam Webster talking about the open source Golden Dawn. So thanks again for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. Also taking a small hiatus from the Latex Records, and I'm playing another song from the Toadstool Bandits of Gilgamesh, and this song is called Come Take Your Fill. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope to see everybody at the Thelema Coast to Coast Meetup in Berkeley. Again, June 6th, 2006. Love's the law, love under will.
one is just our